When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
As an abused child who had no voice, my guest today has spent her adult life helping others find their own. Jackie Bailey created a public speaking and leadership curriculum for children, teens, and adults. Through her nonprofit corporation, she provides mentoring and instruction via weekly courses, workshops, and coaching. She's taken some seemingly unrelated paths to get here. After graduating high school, she worked for a friend in Utah flipping motels. It involved painting, sheetrocking, and general construction, but enjoyed the transformation from rundown to remarkable. And there's Jackie's direct connection to the construction industry. But her journey goes far beyond this. In 2007, Jackie went to the annual conference of Speaking Consulting Network, which she had joined. She heard Jeannie Robinson as the keynote speaker, and Jackie was amazed at her ability to make her laugh and cry in the same presentation. She asked Jeannie how she'd learned that, and Jeannie suggested joining Toastmasters International. There was a club a mile from her home, and Jackie joined. A few years later, she was leading not just her club, but a district of 3,500 members. She was training a team of 100 volunteers how to meet milestones, managing a large nonprofit budget and starting new nonprofits from the ground up. The experience was unmatched. Her voice is now heard by many. She found it, and she shares it through verbal and written communication. She authored a book titled Self-Centered Leadership, Becoming Influential, Intentional, and Exceptional. I talk often about communication, about love, about inclusion, about social justice. The work that Jackie is doing with the foundation and the Speak, Feed, Lead project touches so many people across society. I'm so pleased to have Jackie as my guest today. By the end of our conversation, every person who listens to my conversation will have received a gift. Jackie, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. It's delightful to be here.
Thanks. So you can see how I connect your body of work to four things, four words, or five actually, that are very, very important to me and pretty much all of the work I do in the construction industry. And those words include communication. That's a big part of what you are helping people learn, how to have their voice, how to become good communicators, whether they're young and just need to express what's going on in their lives, whether they're adults and they're trying to find their way. You talk about communication, you practice it, you model it in so many ways. So let's start with that. Talk about communication and why that is really kind of the focus of your body of work.
Well, let's imagine for a minute that you're building an office space, you're building a high rise, or even just a small cabin in the woods, and you just start building it without a plan. There's no blueprint, there's no decision about what materials are going to be used to build this building, this house, this whatever. What's the likelihood that that's going to be successful in the outcome? Is it going to be what you expected? Or are you going to take some twists and turns to get there? Well, I have found that my journey in communication, or at least finding my voice, has been very much like that. There wasn't really a blueprint when I began. I just started building. And throughout my lifetime now of sharing my voice, the blueprint has been created step by step, message by message, impact by impact, when I've helped other people to start to speak. And now I have built an organization that truly houses individuals who have incredible messages to share with the world. And then I provide them the stage that allows them to do that. And communication is everything. It's not optional. We have to have some sort of ability to speak and to listen, to understand. what other mm-hmm. people are saying. And when that happens from both sides, you know, then that house, that building is perfectly built the way your expectation was.
Yeah. You mentioned something which I emphasize quite a bit. You talked about listening to be understood. Probably the single biggest weakness in just general interactions between people on a day-to-day basis is it's hard sometimes, oftentimes, to listen. And if you can't listen well, I use the term actively or active listening. Mm-hmm. If you can't listen well for the purpose of understanding, how do you move forward? How do you help yourself? How do you help other people? And the short answer is it becomes very difficult to do it. Talk to us about, and I'm looking at them in the background as I look at you, you have the three words for your project: speak, feed, lead. Talk to each of those.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you. Speak is fairly self-evident. Speak is about giving confidence to people, helping them recognize their unique message that they've spent their whole life preparing, whether they've been writing it down or not. They've been preparing through life's experiences to have a unique message that, when spoken, is going to inspire one person, or it's going to inspire thousands of people. And so speaking with power is one of the first legs of our three-legged stool in the Speak, Feed, Lead project. Secondly, feed is about the kinds of words we use. We want to uplift people. I teach even the youngest students how to speak with curiosity in mind and the ability to say the right things to help people feel good about who they are, to help someone feel acknowledged and honored in your presence. So to focus on them and listen to them, that's feeding their spirit. It's feeding their soul. And we also teach our students how to provide meaningful feedback to others. So not only are they learning how to be excellent speakers themselves, but they're listening to the messages of others and giving them helpful advice or suggestions about how they themselves could also be more powerful speakers. So mm-hmm. feedback and feeding others with uplifting words is what the second part is about. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I truly believe that when you can speak your message with power, and when you use the right words to do it, now you have influence. You have positive influence, which is really what leadership is. If I had to boil leadership, the definition of leadership, down into one word, it would be influence. And we all have it. I mean, we had influence before we were even born. I ask my students to imagine, when you were in your mom's tummy, how did you think you influenced her change of behavior? And, you know, she was probably a little more careful. She probably ate a little bit differently. She didn't go horseback riding or things like that. And you influenced her behavior before she even knew your name, before she even laid eyes on you for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that influence will only grow stronger as we come into the world, and we are being watched by people all the time, and we are being examples all the time. So leading is really about influencing people in a positive way, and knowing that everything you do is going to either make someone else go, I don't want to be that way, or that's the type of person I want to be. So those are Speak, Feed, Lead. Those are the three things that we really focus on and part of our mission when we are teaching kids and adults alike.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how many in the various age ranges, how many people have been involved in your program since you launched your foundation?
Wow. Hundreds and hundreds of children. Mm-hmm. I can't even give you an exact number. Again, because every child we've taught is now influencing hundreds and hundreds of more people. I mean, just through what they've learned. The adults are the same way. I'm so delighted and grateful to be part of so many communities, networks of people who are just amazing, and they're really changing the world in their own genius way. And the impact that they've made on me, I can only imagine I've made some sort of impact on them as well. So from my earliest days, when I broke the silence of my abuse, I made an impact on one little girl's life. And it took me 30 years to learn the impact I made on her. But I kept her from being abused. And that was really the first time when I knew my voice actually mattered.
Yeah. You talked in a video that you have on your website about an occasion where you were giving a speech and asking for feedback from the audience members. And you observed there was an individual that kind of stuck out in terms of appearance. You yeah. talked about piercings. You talked about tattoos all over his upper body. But then when it came to him to ask for his feedback, share with us retell that story and what came out of that.
Yes, thank you. It was at a hospital, actually. I'd been invited to share this two speeches that I'd been preparing for the International Speech Championship, which is called the World Championship of Public Speaking. And I'd been invited several places to give those speeches and always got audience feedback. And so at this particular occasion, I was at a hospital cafeteria, and there were probably 50 people there. And like you say, one young man stood up to give me feedback, as people before him had done. But he didn't look like a doctor. He didn't look like a patient. And he just seemed out of place to me because of the way he appeared, and you described him well. And he said to me, "I really don't have anything to say about your speech, but I'm an abuser, and for the first time, I understand what my victims go through." And wow, that mm-hmm. took my breath away, because I could only hope that from that moment on, he was influenced by what I said enough that he stopped victimizing whoever that was, and that his life changed and perhaps their life changed as well. And you never know the impact that your words are going to have. You speak them out anyway, and then you hope for the best, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That must have been, there was probably some gasping going on in the room.
Yes. Well, but he was very brave to actually stand up and say that in the first place.
Yeah.
So I applaud him for even having the courage to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As I close my introduction, we've talked a bit about communication. I also talk about inclusion. Relate what your mission is and your vision is to just the notion of what inclusion, what diversity, what equity is all about, just because I think it is related. So if you could connect the dots and share your thoughts about that.
Wow. Well, inclusion to me means that every child, no matter what life situation they're in, deserves to be heard. And what I've learned is that when I work with these kids, they have such powerful messages. Their perspectives are so important for us to understand. And they have, from the earliest age, and I work with kids as young as 10, they have things that we need to know. They need to say it, and we need to listen to it. And unfortunately, I'm a parent and I'm a grandparent, and I know there have been times in my life when I have not listened, and or I've said something that helped, made a child believe I wasn't listening to them. And so including everybody in this idea that we all should be heard, no matter how young or inexperienced we are, is really important to our programs. Diversity, oh my goodness, the pandemic gave me a great gift. And that is that we moved from in-person classes here in this studio that I opened in 2019 so that kids could come here and learn, to having to flip to an online curriculum. And it opened the door wide for us mm-hmm. to branch around the world. Mm-hmm. And now we have mentees in all around the United States, but in mm-hmm. India and China and Australia and Canada and Mexico. It's a beautiful thing to be able to expand to kids around the world, and they get to hear each other's messages and learn from each other from different cultures. And there's really no language barriers when you're listening from the heart. Mm-hmm. Equity, I think that mirrors inclusion a little bit, is that there's lots of challenges we go through. Many of us have different family lives and maybe we are the haves or the have-nots, but the one way that we are all equal to each other is the value of our voice and the power that what we have to say can inspire someone mm-hmm. to feel differently or to think differently. And I'm just so grateful that I'm teaching kids, that I have the opportunity to teach kids that, because mm-hmm. when they learn about their own messages, they then understand everybody mm-hmm. has a message, no matter whether it's the homeless man who sits on the park bench or the president of the United States. Everyone has a story that they can learn from, and they find value in that person, and they have empathy for that person and all of mankind, I hope, you know, is my mission. Mm-hmm. So it's just listening to each other. It's loving each other. It's including everyone, acknowledging and appreciating our diversity, understanding that we all have something that we can learn from each other.
Yeah. You've impacted also teenagers, young and young adults, and even some older folks as well. Mm-hmm. Share a bit about each of those segments of your clients, if you will, or the people you serve. Yeah.
Well, as this is taking place today, I am waiting with bated breath to learn how many of my mentees are going to be chosen to speak on a TEDx stage in April. There were 5 or 6 of them that applied and were interviewed for this opportunity, and we're going to find out today or tomorrow who was chosen, hopefully all of them, mm-hmm. To be on a TEDx stage. These are all 11 to about 15-year-old kids, and they, when they get on a stage like that, after having developed their message, I don't have any data to prove this, Dennis, but I can tell you, I'm really confident, those are not the kids who are going to take their lives.
Yeah.
Those are not the kids who are going to make decisions to get into drugs or to take a gun to school and, mm-hmm. you know, show their anger towards someone, because they just have a different viewpoint of individuals. They have a different viewpoint of themselves. And so I really think programs like this need to be more universal. They need mm-hmm. to be in the school systems so that kids have more opportunity to really speak about what they want to speak about, rather than here's a research project, go research this and then report on this topic. That's really not helping to shape them into the individuals we really want them to be. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate the opportunity that I have to help teenagers to recognize their value. And adults are the same. I work with a lot of adults who are trauma survivors like I am. Mm-hmm. And just as I healed, every time I shared my story, I healed a little bit more from my own trauma. I see that happening with my clients. And these are even clients that have been in therapy like I was, but until they start to open up and actually take their experiences, put them into story form and begin to share it, they really don't see their own power. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, I honestly say that this needs to be part of what therapists are doing, because people are healing their traumas by telling their stories. Even if they never speak in front of an audience, mm-hmm. they can be writing it, or they can be just sharing it in conversations or with other people that they know. But every time they share their story, my clients heal a little bit more from their traumas. And our voice is so powerful, mm-hmm. and it really is our superpower, because we can either spew poison from our mouths, or we can actually empower people through what we say to them and the stages that we give them to speak.
Yeah. You mentioned school systems. How do you connect to the school systems, even just in your local area, or are you outside the environment completely? How do you connect?
That's a good question. In 2019, when we became a nonprofit, it was the same year that we opened the studio here. And I contacted the school district in my local area before I became a nonprofit. And they were the impetus for making that decision, because they said, we would love to incorporate your programs as enrichment opportunities into our curriculum, but you have to be a nonprofit for us to work with you. Mm-hmm. So I went, okay, I'll do that then.
I can do that, yeah.
So that's right. So I officially became a nonprofit in December of 2019, and we know what happened around the February-March timeframe of 2020. A few months later, schools closed down, and that mm-hmm. kind of closed the doors mm-hmm. for us to be able to work with the schools at that time. And then when kids started getting back into schools, and there was just a lot of chaos happening until things returned to some sort of normal, now people say, well, have you gotten back with the schools? And to be perfectly honest, Dennis, I think the schools are not going to be where I want to go at this mm-hmm. point. They're so regulated by programs that I don't think actually empower kids, mm-hmm. that I don't feel like it's in alignment with mm-hmm. what I'm doing any longer. Mm-hmm. And I believe our programs are way more powerful than what I could do in the schools. So
the obvious thing for a nonprofit to try to sustain themselves, obviously, is funding. How do you go about attracting grant funds? I would assume that's an important revenue stream for you, is grants?
Well, it's important, but it certainly hasn't been a main one. It's it has been challenging to get grants. I lose grants all the time to cupcake shops, and I am not exaggerating at all. I apply.
Cupcakes are important.
They can be helpful in certain ways, but I feel I'm in a completely different category in how I can help our society and communities than cupcake shops can. But mm-hmm. I lose grants all the time to small businesses that are doing things like that. And unfortunately, I feel like, well, I've actually been told that as a white woman, I just can't get money right now. So I actually am okay with that, because I would rather be self-sustaining in what we're doing with our programs. And I feel that we have been and we can be. Yes, we've had some challenging times. But for the families who can afford our programs, the impact they make is quadrupled, because now they can impact two or three or four more students who can't afford our programs. Right. So we're all working on this together, and it's actually a nice thing. I've yeah. gotten some grant money, but it's not something that I really spend my time doing, because it's proved to not be helpful.
So basically, the term I would use to describe it, and this may be incorrect, but you have something of an ability to pay model. So you enroll people that can pay the fees, but you also then have an opportunity to be able to enroll individuals who cannot. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Yes, absolutely. There are people who can afford our fees, and because we're a nonprofit, they get a nice tax benefit.
Yeah.
And many of our students have parents who work for companies that do charitable matching projects as well. So they can either have half their enrollment fees paid through a charitable match, mm-hmm. or we get the impact of that regardless. And then we have a beautiful network of sponsors. Good. So many times when we have a student who can't afford our programs and we just don't have enough in our treasury to say, here, we'll just fund this for you, mm-hmm. I send out a message to our sponsors and I say, Here's Johnny or Sally, and here's a little bit of their story. Is there anyone who can help pay for part or all of this curriculum fees? And wow. most of the time, they've come through with that. So it is great. And now the student feels like, hey, there's people that value what mm-hmm. I want to do. And that speaks a lot to them as well. So it's a beautiful thing all the way around.
That's awesome. You know, my mentor, a guy named Steve Farber, has written a number of books on leadership. And in his first book, almost 22 years ago now, I think maybe 21, he included in part of his message was directed at individuals who were leaders. And he said to those leaders, do what you love in the service of people who love what you do. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you can relate to that
Absolutely.
Set of thoughts.
Absolutely.
So talk to me about the role that love plays in your mission.
Mm. Well, it's hard to get up in the morning unless you love what you're doing. It's hard to get through a day unless you love the people that you're working with and for and in behalf of. And sometimes at the end of a day when I've had three or four club meetings with kids, and you know, when you're working with kids, you got to be on your game or they will devour you.
Said in a very gentle way. That was the good.
Yes. So that means it takes a lot of energy to be on your game for an hour or for 90 minutes at a time, and making sure that no one sees any weak links in your chain. Mm-hmm. And so by the end of the day, I can be very tired, but it's a good tired because I know that I made a difference. Mm-hmm. And so love plays a big part in that. If I didn't love what I was doing, then it would be even harder. And I don't think I would be successful. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was a time during the pandemic when funds were so low and we weren't getting the grants, we weren't getting the outside help, and parents weren't necessarily paying for programs either because they were holding on to what they had with an unsure future. Yeah. That I got a little bit lost, and I started feeling like if I don't make money, I'm not going to be able to survive. And having that attitude, although it was true, I realized that it was actually undermining my success because I had refocused to, I got to make money. I got to make money to do this, rather than I just got to keep loving the kids. I got to just keep working toward my mission. And having to make that change to my mindset and my motivation made a big difference. Mm-hmm. So that's what I learned from that, is I can't make it about making sure I have enough revenue. I just got to do what I'm doing and impact the lives that I can, and the revenue will follow.
Mm-hmm. If you were trying to influence me to make a donation to your foundation, what story would you tell me about how your mission is serving people that you think would move me?
Well, I'll tell you a couple, actually. One of my students, one of my first students when I started teaching public speaking and after I became a nonprofit, his name was Charlie. Charlie was about 11 when he started as a student in what we then had were public speaking courses. And he was with me for about 18 months or so. And then he went into middle school and then on to high school. And he came to me a couple of years later. So he was probably early high school years. And I hadn't talked to Charlie for a couple of years. And he came to me and he said, "Miss Jackie, I love public speaking so much that I was hoping you would help me start a public speaking club at my school. Would you do that?" And I'm like, wow, this is awesome. He's paying mm-hmm. it forward. He sees the benefit of it. And again, sometimes you have those tender mercies where I work with kids and they go on their way and they get busy with sports or whatnot. And again, I didn't know how much the courses we'd offered had impacted Charlie. But when he came back and said, "This is what I want to do now. I want to start mm-hmm. this club." And so we did. Mm-hmm. Charlie and I started a club, 20 members strong. And then we continued to grow it. And we worked on that club for 4 years together. And that was a beautiful situation. So I would say, we need more Charlies. You know, mm-hmm. we need more people who see the power that a voice can give you when you're 11 or 12 years old, and that you can give it back. Mm-hmm. And there's ways that you can do that. So that's one story. Another story I will share is about Samuel. Samuel is actually in Nigeria. And he was a student I connected with through a Facebook post I made, and his mom contacted me. And she said, "He wants to be a speaker." And he was 11 years old at the time. And so despite internet issues between here and Nigeria, Samuel was trainable, he was coachable, and he spoke on a couple of summits. And then he lost his laptop. The laptop he was using to be able to connect with me and be coached, his older brother actually had to take it off when he went to college. Mm. And so Samuel was without a laptop, and that meant he could not join our courses. So the best I could do was try to find someone in my network that might help me get a laptop for Samuel. So mm-hmm. I put a little call to action out just to people that I knew, and someone connected me with someone else, and then that person connected me with someone that actually was in Nigeria and worked at Microsoft in Nigeria, and she said, yeah, I can get him a laptop. He only just needs to come and pick this up from me.
Wow.
And so then Samphil, he got his laptop, and then he was able to continue with his courses. So those are a couple of things that I can tell you we've done. We've inspired Charlie to say, speaking is so important. I want to pay it forward with my friends and let them know how important it is and give them opportunity to do that. And then we have people who recognize that kids need to feel empowered and they need tools to do that. So there are people who are willing to provide those tools so that the kids can have their voice shared around the world. And, you know, those are a couple of examples where people have come into play and said, I'm going to do something about this.
Yeah. Is there somewhere in your journey, is there a story where someone was in such a bad place in their lives that connecting to your program helped turn their life around?
I'm working with a client right now. Her husband has left her with three kids. And at the same time, she's healing from childhood abuse. And she's in therapy for that. However, she came to me and she said, the therapist is not really helping me with the abuse. They're, you know, kind of doing surface things. And she says, I heard your story one time when you were speaking, and I'm wondering if you could just talk to me and give me some advice or help me. And so I've sat down with her and I've just asked her to share with me her story and some of her feelings about that. I've encouraged her to start writing down some of the feelings that she's having and some of the things that she can do to start empowering the little girl that she was. I said, because I think the little girl that you were is also now the woman that you are experiencing the same things, but now because you're an adult, you can make different choices. And she has said to me, I can't even explain how much of an impact that makes on me. It's so much better than the therapy that I'm getting, because you actually understand. She says, you understand what I've gone through. I don't have to try to explain everything to you. You get it because you've been where I am, and you're not judging me because I feel certain things. So that's something that's happening currently. And she's, every time I see her, she's just smiling. She still has the same challenges, but she's overcoming them because she recognizes she has the power to do that through sharing her voice. And so that's something that's happening currently.
Yeah. I guess in your words that you gave her a voice.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to say this, but we're at the end of our allotted time, but you know, I'm just reflecting on what we've talked about. But this is a podcast whose the front row of the podcast seats are filled with people in the construction industry. But those same people are mothers, fathers, sons and daughters, have children of all ages. So I hope a lot of people listen to our conversation and recognize that there are people like you out there that are giving voice to their children, to their communities. There's no bad news in any of that. It's all good news. I admire your perseverance. It's obvious it's a commitment. It's hard to describe, but I see in your smile and hear in your voice with humility, the joy you get out of making a difference. So, Jackie, it's been great to talk to you, and I look forward to hearing the final. It's always interesting to listen to it after we recorded it. So it'll be a number of weeks before we get a chance to hear this conversation, but I know that I'll be smiling through most of it and really appreciate you sharing your vision, your mission, and your successes with us. So thanks for being on the podcast.
Dennis, you're welcome, and I'm grateful to you for allowing me to have a voice today. Thanks,
Jackie.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Softest Steel Podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Softest Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Softest Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Softest Steel Podcast with Dennis Duran.
produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.